Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Nice to have you with us today. We're going to talk about an anti-cancer, anti-diabetic berry. It is called the macai, but it's spelled M-A-Q-U-I. It's very rare, and there's an article published in the peer-reviewed Journal of Food Science and Human Wellness, research done at Nova Southwestern University. And the scientific community has long considered nutritional supplementation to be a good way of keeping the body healthy. In fact, in some cases now, in many medical schools, they're actually having courses in alternative or complementary medicine based upon what has been published in the peer-reviewed literature, and there are hundreds of thousands of studies on vitamin D and vitamin C in a plant-based diet, exercise, meditation. So everything we discuss every day on this radio program is backed by good quality science. Now, here's the irony. So just think about this for a moment. Here are the experts, those people who are brought on television and who say with absolute certainty and self-confidence that such and such is right and everything else is wrong. Nothing they support concerning the traditional American diet now, popular items sold on television, promoted, we see them all the time, every day, have any science to back them up. No good science. None. There's no science out there. We've looked. I looked for a new documentary on veganism. I looked at everything in the scientific literature on the healing properties, anti-aging properties, beneficial properties of eating meat. It's not there. But there are hundreds of studies on how it contributes to disease. And yet the people who are telling us how to eat are giving us misinformation. The people on television giving us misinformation. And yet they're considered the experts. How is it that it's absolutely the opposite? And those giving the right information are considered wrong. And as a result, we have a nation of very sick people and who are dying prematurely with no consequences. So here is a question I'd like for you to call in and address on our talkback number of 888-874-4888. In almost every area of life, and almost all the major institutions are sharing misinformation. And the consequences of the misinformation are causing people adverse events in their life, like on COVID, or on nuclear power, or on electric cars, which are absurd when you see how much fossil fuel is used and how much of the polluting technologies are used to make a car. So think of that for a moment. Virtually everything you're being told on every topic, we want peace. But you just invaded a country and destroyed its leaders. We want to bring democracy, but we don't have democracy. We have rampant predatory capitalism. And look at the consequences. Everything we're doing is on at the not the personal level, but it's certainly at the professional level in these major fields are wrong. We want to save your life, take the chemotherapy, take the radiation. Okay, and 99% of the people do. At the end of the year, there's 560,000 deaths. Over the last 20 years, that's over 10 million people died, and there is no moment of stopping and saying, maybe we've got it wrong. Maybe we should change. Maybe our model's not working. Think of the trillions of dollars made and the careers made by using the wrong paradigm. I don't say they do that intentionally. I don't say that they don't have the best of intents, but I'm saying look at the outcome. So we're rarely connected with the outcome of the choices we make. I'll give you one quick example before I get into health. They're going to spend upwards, all told, around $2.3 trillion. Could go as high as $2.9 trillion. And it's an infrastructure project, but only 6% of the money is going for infrastructure. They're going to do a massive giveaway, and it's just nothing more than legal theft. They're going to do a private-public cooperations, meaning, I'll give you one example. They'll give millions tens of millions, even hundreds of millions of dollars to a private company that is politically affiliated, that has given money through contributions, donations, or lobbying to legislators, but who have no expertise whatsoever in the field that they're about to embark on. They're getting these huge checks. And when the money runs out, it'll be rebooted. It's called cost plus. So they'll put in the costs. What are the costs? Well, how about all those jets that the corporate heads get to fly on anywhere they want? What about the townhouses or the apartments in major cities like Chicago, New York, and Los Angeles that the corporate elite can go and stay at any time they want? But it's all costs. What about their advertising campaign? What about their lobbying? It's a part of the cost. So we're paying them to lobby the government to give them more money in contracts. One example, Halliburton had the exclusive contracts to wash the soldiers' uniforms in Iraq. As a result, what would cost about 50 cents in local currency just to wash your clothes, they got $100 a bag, a duffel bag, simple duffel bag. And the clothes came out smelling terrible, weren't clean, yet not once was it changed. Another company got a truck, a contract, that if anything at all goes wrong with the truck, just walk away from it, burn it. So then a flat tire, they burn a truck, $80,000 truck. Oh, yeah, this is actually a documentary on this, of where the money was going. You're talking about billions of dollars wasted. Nothing changes. Why do we allow it? But we do. In everything, we allow bad medical procedures to be done, like synthetic hormone replacement therapy for women. You're putting at least 1.3 to 1.5 million women's lives at risk every single 12 months by using synthetic hormone replacement therapy to increase the rate of heart attack, stroke, breast cancer, ovarian cancer, colorectal cancer, and dementia. That's been proven by the government's own studies. It's not stopped. So you see, why is it we do this? Why is it we just can't get anything right? Anything. We just don't do anything right when it comes to not individuals, not small business people, not innovative people who have their own companies, but I'm just talking about major corporations. One more example of how bad we get it. Kaepernick and LeBron James and Tiger Woods. Two of them very outspoken, and rightly so, about racism. Good. I'm glad they're saying what they're saying. Where do they get those checks, the big checks, huge checks, more with one check than you will make in a lifetime? Oh, that comes from China, and those women are making, what, 20 cents an hour or whatever it is, working in one of these sweatshops? Is that not also brought into the equation? How can you be shaming everyone on inequality and you're creating inequality directly, personally, you personally, as a person? Why doesn't anyone ever stand up to these people and say, if you're going to talk about inequality, how about how you make your money in endorsements from Nike and other companies? Not a word. Crickets. And that's for all athletes in all fields, because that's where the money goes. You don't hear a word in the media. Why are we a nation living at such gross contradiction from truth and reality? I like your opinion. 888-874-4888. I'll take your calls later on the program. So now, going back to health and nutrition, we can't even get it right who to listen to, what we should be paying attention to. We're listening to the wrong so-called experts, who are not experts at all, and we're listening to the wrong information. We're eating their hot dogs, their hamburgers, their french fries, and all these other strange concoctions, and we're not looking at the consequences to our body or to the earth or to its natural resources or exploitation. But along comes some people who are doing it right, and they get no attention at all. That's why I'm doing this on the anti-cancer effect. So something that would help you prevent cancer would make sense, right? Is that reasonable? Why can't we prevent a disease? Oh, no, you can't do that. You cannot, according to the FDA, and I fought them. I fought them in Washington, D.C. I fought them in Congress. I fought them in a demonstration, one of the largest demonstrations. In fact, it was the largest demonstration on health in front of the U.S. Senate There are photographs of that up on there are thousands and thousands of people showed up. And we simply said, we do not want you regulating our food because it's our food. They would have had it, they would regulate it so you couldn't make any claim about any food and health. So you couldn't say carrots are good for night vision or eating oranges would be good for vitamin C, which helps stimulate your immune system. They wanted to ban all that. The only person you get information on about your health is your doctor. But you look at the average doctor. The average doctor's sick. They're dying from obesity and stroke and heart disease and cancers. So they're not an expert. That's a battle we won, at least temporarily. So now we have a berry that can help prevent cancer. And it also helps with diabetes. This is from the journal Food Science and Human Wellness. They're looking now at recent studies can reduce postprandial insulin levels by as much as 50%, meaning after you have a meal, this can help your blood sugar from spiking up by almost half. And it's just as effective as metformin. And most of the diabetics are taking metformin. They have a lot of serious side effects. And that increases insulin sensitivity and stabilizing blood sugar. The berry's mechanisms of action involves inhibiting sodium-dependent glucose transporters in the small intestine and slowing glucose's rate of entry into the bloodstream, which effectively reduces the likelihood of blood sugar spikes, hyperglycemia, or the spiking going up. Remember, what goes up fast comes down fast, and you end up with hyperglycemia, that fatigue. So you have sugar in a meal or sugar snack, and you have 15, 20 minutes of energy, and then you have another hour, no energy. But here's what's important. At the same time, this, what is called a shilinus, contributes to cancer prevention since chronically high blood glucose levels are linked to the development of cancers. And studies have shown that diabetics and pre-diabetics have a very big risk of developing cancerous growths. So, let me give you the spelling of the berry. Now, I know some of you are getting this. Know that for a fact. But for the rest, M-A-Q-U-I. Okay? Now, new research from Karolinska Institute in Sweden shows that vitamin D is good for helping the body with respiratory infections and for all risk groups. This was published in The Lancet, Diabetes and Endocrinology. So the studies show that when you take vitamin D, which you should every day, unless you're outside in sunny weather all the time, it provides a certain degree of protection against respiratory infections. That's good. And helping prevent or reduce the risk of infections is a major way that you can help protect yourself from respiratory infections, colds and flus. And they looked at 43 randomized placebo-controlled studies using 49,000 people. So that's a lot of work. One more reason why you should be taking your vitamin D every day. And if you start to get sick, really up it. 40, 50, 60,000 units of vitamin D for several days. Also, concerning vitamin D, from the Institute in Portugal, when you have vitamin D and you're using a diet that is positive in inflammation, meaning your standard diet, high in sugars, meats, alcohol, it increases periodontal conditions and it also affects cognitive function, both. So if you don't want diseases in the mouth and you don't want to slow down your memory process, make sure you're getting your vitamin D. And one final thought here, a lot of people are taking way too much protein, and athletes in particular take way too much protein. In fact, when I was back in high school and I was taking a lot of protein, not from animals, well, non-fat dry milk is how I got mine. I was later realizing, my goodness, I'm taking four times more protein than what the body actually can use. The body can't store protein. So whatever you're not using, it's breaking down And it's a very toxic process of deamidization going through an increase in urea and ammonium. That's why people on high-protein diets frequently have brain fog. And by the way, I had this conversation many times with Robert Atkins, who was a close friend of mine for a long time. And every time we'd go out to dinner, he'd have nothing but meat and pork rinds. He'd have the most god-awful food. And I'd be sitting there and having a healthy vegan diet. And I said, you know, Bob, a lot of your patients come over to see me. They've lost some weight, but then they're tired. They have brain fog. I said, do you actually understand the biochemistry of what's happening on these high-protein diets? Of course I do. We give them supplements for that. I said, that's like, you know, someone smoking and then giving them vitamin C. It doesn't make any sense. Anyhow, we had difference of opinions, but we were still had enough of the things we agreed upon that we were longtime good friends. In fact, such good friends, he would give me a call and he'd say, hey, let's go out and take on the FDA. So we'd go down to Washington, D.C. and hold a press conference and go after the FDA. We go out to Los Angeles, Chicago. We went all across America. One time we were out for 30 days, 30 cities in 30 days. We took the fight to them. So here's the latest in the University of Illinois, published in the American Journal of Physiology, Endocrinology, and Metabolism. Quote, more protein does not mean more strength in resistance training middle-aged adults. This was a 10-week muscle-building and dietary program involving 50 middle-aged adults. They found no evidence, zero, that eating a high-protein diet increased strength or muscle mass more than consuming a moderate amount of protein while training. Hence, stop with all the high-protein diets. They're not helping you, especially if you're athletic. That's the latest on health and healing. Now, we've got something interesting today, and it's going to be very educational. It'll show you how much of a spectrum there is in points of view on vaccines. I'm going to hold my thoughts till later. I have four discussions coming up, including Naomi Wolf. This is Joe Scarborough, who was a politician in the House, and now he and his wife do a morning show. Here is his measured and intemperate discussion about those who might have a legitimate question or any question about vaccination with the COVID vaccines.
Incredible. The stupidity is incredible. They've taken a country where we've had people throughout the generations, you know, fight for liberty and fight for freedom. Freedom of speech, the freedom to go to the church you want to go to, or the synagogue you wanted to, or the mosque, or not to go at all, right? The freedom of assembly, all of these freedoms, these idiots are now saying, I have the right to be stupid as hell. I have the right to believe stupid as hell people on Facebook. I have the right to believe in conspiracy theories and make you and your family and everybody around you like in danger, put you in danger. Okay, you do. You really do. So go ahead, like I said, go ahead, go live in your basement, yeah, all right? But it's not going to stop us. And if we didn't have the guy that we had in the White House over the past 4 years, that number you're seeing on the screen, according to people who worked for him and helped run his task force, that number on the screen would have been a lot
lower.
We would have saved more lives, most likely, than people who died in Vietnam. We would have saved more lives, most likely, than American soldiers who died in combat in World War I. We would have saved so many lives. But no, you had to be stupid. You had to believe the stupid guy. I don't know. You really, I can't help you. Nobody mm-hmm. can help you, right? If you still believe in God, maybe get on your knees and pray and ask why it is that your thought system, that your belief system has been so corrupted that you follow QAnon, that you follow conspiracy theories, that you believe liars on Facebook instead of believing the truth. Well, Jesus said, I am the way, the truth and the when did that stop mattering to you? When did the truth stop?
Okay, that's his point of view. And any scientific references? You said that we would have lost less people than the Vietnam War. That's around 58,000. Would that have also included those that are still being killed or maimed today with personal, anti-personal landmines that were planted, blowing up people? How about all the people exposed to Agent Orange, about 3 million, all the vets who came back exposed to the defoliant dioxin, 2,4,5-T? Would you throw those figures in also? And invading a foreign country that posed no harm to the United States, that actually came, Ho Chi Minh actually came to the United States. He really valued our Constitution and wanted advice how we could go forward and work together. He, with a unified Vietnam, working as our partner since they've been under French colonial rule through 1953, No, Joe, so when you're using an analogy, please be specific and show us the proof. But now here is a person who has spent tens of thousands of hours as a physician, as a scientist, on the subject of vaccines, just vaccines. She knows everything about the chemistry of vaccine. I've interviewed her many times. Now here's what she has to say about those stupid people, those arrogant, stupid, dangerous domestic terrorists that would put someone's lives at risk because of their stupidity when it comes to the subject of vaccines. So, Joe, how would you respond to the information she's about to share, all of which can be found in the peer-reviewed scientific literature?
Are very important to talk about, and two of them are similar and one is very different. So the messenger RNA vaccine or messenger RNA shot is the one that's involved with the Pfizer shot and the Moderna shot, and both of them come to the market in about the same time, and they inject a small little piece of genetic material. Now keep in mind that this genetic material, this type of injection, has never been done before, ever. This is all the animal, they've been trying to develop a coronavirus vaccine as far back as 2002, and they were never able to bring it to market because they could not prove safety. When they would inject the coronavirus experimental vaccines into animals, they would get re-exposed with the coronavirus, and they would come either deathly sick or die. So the FDA said, you can't move this forward. And the articles talk about the fact the researchers said that we must proceed with great caution to move forward to develop a coronavirus vaccine in humans because of a process called antibody-dependent enhancement, which we can talk about in a minute. But this is an experimental vaccine. When you think about vaccines, you know, most people have had their children vaccinated. They probably were vaccinated as a kid. I mean, up through 1985, there were only three different shots. Between 1991 is when they started ramping up the schedule to where now children get multiple doses of 16 or 17 different shots between birth and 18 years of age. They started ramping up the adult vaccination schedule in 2015. And so everybody is very familiar with the term vaccine. And I think that everybody thinks that vaccine are uniform and they're all the same, and that you just inject a little piece of viral material and a little piece of bacteria into the body, you develop an antibody, and you're protected. Well, it's much more complex than that. And all of those previous shots injected particles of bacteria or whole intact viruses. So the immune response was completely different. In these two vaccines, the Pfizer shot and the Moderna shot, they take a little piece of genetic material that's called messenger RNA. And it's encoded, meaning it's got a recipe written on it for a specific type of protein. So if you can keep that in mind, that with messenger RNA, it's literally a messenger. It takes a message from your cellular DNA out into your cells with a recipe, that it takes the recipe to the manufacturing process. And that manufacturing process is called the ribosomes. Think of the ribosomes as an assembly line. So they take the recipe, They do from your DNA, the messenger RNA goes out into the cell, delivers the recipe to the ribosomes. The ribosomes then process the recipe and make a protein. That happens all day long, 24/7 in our bodies. It's a normal process that happens inside of us. It helps us with repair, like if you've had surgery or an injury or any of those things. It's all of those repair things. Well, what these two injections have done is they've taken a piece of a messenger RNA that has a recipe written on it designed in a lab. And that that recipe is to go and make, through the manufacturing process, a protein called the spike protein. Those messenger RNA little particles are extremely unstable. And in order to take them from the laboratory and get them into your body, they have to be wrapped around in a bubble of lipid coating. So they put it in a bubble, like a basketball. They put it in a lipid coating that has several different types of lipids on it that have never been injected into human beings before. So we've never used this lipid interface in any of the previous vaccines. We don't know if all three of those, you know, if one of them are toxic, we don't know what happens when all three of them are together. There's been nothing called synergistic toxicity testing. They wrap around that messenger RNA with the recipe to keep it stable. And in the Pfizer shot, it has to be stored at like minus 70 degrees Fahrenheit or minus 60 degrees centigrade. So it's colder than the North Pole to keep it stable in order to get it from the lab into the solution to then be injected into your arm. So that lipid coating has one of its chemicals on the outside, like a shellac. On the outside of that lipid coating is something called polyethylene glycol. Polyethylene glycol is known to cause big allergic reactions. And in my opinion, I believe that's what's responsible for a lot of people having the allergic reactions and going into anaphylactic shock, which we've had hundreds of cases of that. So when they inject that messenger RNA with the recipe coated in the lipids with the shellac around the outside of it into your body, that lipid protein binds with your cells and opens up, think about it like cracking open like an egg, and depositing that messenger RNA with the recipe inside of your cells. That recipe then is run through the ribosomes. It's think of that as the factory to make the protein. That protein is called the spike protein. That protein is supposed to be similar to the spike protein on the surface of the coronavirus that's causing infection. The idea behind this process is that if we create this protein and then we create an antibody to that protein, we can take that antibody and the next time the coronavirus is floating around, we'll glob onto its spike protein and neutralize it. In theory, that's what's supposed to happen. But instead, what happens is once we've gone through that manufacturing, we've created that spike protein, there's a lot of different things that can happen with it. For one thing, it can irrevocably bind to the surface of your cells. The other thing that that protein can do is, but through a process called transfection, can go backwards. The protein then can bind to your DNA and irreversibly change it. The third thing that spike protein can do once we've manufactured it is, yes, we can make antibodies to that spike protein. The problem is there's a real issue with the antibodies that are created through this process. Under normal vaccination, like for, say, flu shots or the measles or shingles or the chickenpox, we make a particular type of antibody that's called a neutralizing antibody. When that binds to those recurrent viruses, it gobbles them up, brings in your white blood cells, and disposes of it. We don't even know that happens. It happens all day long in our immune system. But the anti-spike antibodies, I've mapped out about 10 different mechanisms of injury that anti-spike antibody can cause inside of your body once it's been created by that process, that manufacturing process I just described. That anti-spike antibody that's supposed to be there to keep you from getting sick, actually, if you produce it in very high quantities, can have direct adverse effects on your tissues, primarily your lungs, but also to the liver, to the kidney, and to your heart. And there's multiple other mechanisms of how that anti-spike antibody can cause harm. So when people think about, well, you know, they say coronavirus, all that circulating coronaviruses out there that we've known have been around for, you know, since about 2000, for 60 years, they've been able to document coronaviruses. On an annual, normal basis, coronaviruses cause something that looks like the flu. So a lot, and we've heard that a lot. We've heard about coronavirus illness and coronavirus, you know, causes kind of like a cold. So if I get this shot, it's just like getting a flu shot, and it'll keep me from getting sick like the flu shot's supposed to do. But the Moderna vaccine and the Pfizer shot, the Moderna shot and the Pfizer shot, they act by a completely different mechanism. So this is not just another flu shot. It's not FDA approved because remember, they've tried to been doing this for almost 20 years. They couldn't get it past safety studies and efficacy studies, meaning it keeps people from getting sick. It's completely experimental. They've never done this before. It was put into the market by something called an EUA, which is Emergency Utilization Authorization. So under the stated emergency of the pandemic, the pharmaceutical companies, Pfizer, Moderna, J&J, and there are 77 more of these shots, 77 more of these vaccinations under current development. And there's 78 more in animal studies. It's beyond me why we need 150 of these. But it's not been FDA approved. It's totally experimental. It's authorized only under experimental emergency use. We have zero long-term studies on what's going to happen down the road with this anti-spike antibody, what can happen with autoimmune diseases, with neurological conditions, with cardiovascular type of conditions. In fact, humanity right now as we speak, we are the experiment. They will find out long-term what's happened to us, and we're their study.
Wow. Dr. Sherry, thank you so much for sharing all that information. I'm curious, can you tell us about the Johnson & Johnson vaccine and how that one is different as well?
It's very different because it bypasses that manufacturing process and the recipe, the manufacturing, and the creating of the protein. What they've actually done with the J&J shot is they've actually taken an adenovirus, a typical adenovirus that causes the cold, and they shelled it out. They've taken the genetic material of that adenovirus out from the inside, and they've taken an already been made spike protein and put it inside of the adenovirus shell. In order to grow that and replicate it, to make it grow, they are using at least one and maybe two different types of tissue cells that come from aborted fetal tissue. One is called PCR.C6, which comes from retinal tissues of previously aborted fetal tissues. And there's another one called HEK that comes from a kidney of a previously aborted fetus. They have to have viruses in order to get a large enough quantity to manufacture a shot or a vaccine. They have to replicate in living tissues. That's why those tissues are used. So you've got this shell of an adenovirus and you've got the protein inside of it. They inject that into your system. The shell of the adenovirus binds to your cells and again, opens up like an egg and deposits that protein into your system and the process begins to create the anti-spike antibodies. That's a foreign protein that's just been deposited into your body. It activates many of your toll-like receptors, which I think are God inside of us. The toll-like receptors separate self from non-self, and toll-like receptors are able to tell what's a foreign protein versus your natural in-your-body protein. There's a huge amount of immunology that happens there. You get a lot of cytokines, which can cause inflammation. You activate the white blood cells, the neutrophils in the bloodstream, and the macrophages in your tissue. There's all this activity that happens, an acute flare-up to create this anti-spike antibody. Now, the anti-spike antibody is going to be the same or very, very similar in all three of those vaccines, because that's the end result, is to make the anti-spike antibody.
Okay, so I know that the CDC, and they have actually given these numbers that as of a few days ago, there were 996 deaths from the COVID-19.
It's actually more than that.
Okay.
That was about 4 weeks ago. The updated date that came from February the 28th, in 1 week, we went from 1,097 reported deaths to 1,278 reported deaths. In 1 week, we went from just under 19,000 reported adverse events to over 25,000 reported events. That's the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System, which is a voluntary reporting system, and it's well known that that database captures about 10% of adverse events. So we could be looking at right now as many as 12,000 deaths. And can you think of one single product? Can you think of any product in any industry, across the board, any industry, that if somewhere between 1,200 and 12,000 people had been killed using it in the first 10 weeks of use, that it would still be on the market? And not only still on the market, but heavy hand.
Okay, that was Dr. Sherry Tenpenny. Now, this is the latest numbers. This shows you what she was referring to. Think of this, everyone. Quote, the Vaccine Adverse Event Reporting System data released today showed 50,861 reports of adverse events following COVID vaccination, including 2,249 deaths and 7,726 very serious injuries. All right, that's what's happening as of today. Now, historically, any drug that came out that had one or two or three deaths, it was stopped. If any product on the market was shown to have deaths, one, two, three, it was taken off. We're talking about, mind you, this is the minimal. Like, this could be as low as 1% actual reporting 50,000. So take 50,000 and multiply that times 100. Now take 2,249 deaths and then take that times 100. That's how serious this is. And yet, no major newspaper, no administration, no World Health Organization, or Anthony Fauci, or anyone else has anything to say about that. And those are real figures. Those are their acknowledged figures. These figures are coming from them. So that's that. Plus, now they want to give us vaccine passports. I warned you that this was coming. What will it mean? It means that they're going to have a record of everything in your life. Wherever you go, they're going to be able to have that data. There will be no protection of your privacy. And if you're certified, they'll give you the carrot. You'll be able to go to ball games or go into stores. You'll be able to go to work. You'll be able to travel. Okay, what if you choose not to or can't? Let's say you have an autoimmune condition, you have cancer, and you can't get this. Well, that's just too bad. You're a second-class citizen. And therefore, the authorities will be given the information on who has not been vaccinated. In effect, much like China's certification system of whether you're a good citizen, you'll get merits going up or demerits coming down if you do anything that the authorities view as not supporting of their campaigns and their ideology. That's what's happening now, and that's coming to the United States. It's already existing in Israel. But now there's a person who decided to do a lot of homework concerning a person, and that person was Anthony Fauci. So he wrote a book. All right. And that book is now out. And immediately they started to attack him. Well, here is one of the journalists. This is a short clip, by the way, 2 minutes. This is a journalist in Washington, one of the inside the Beltway respected journalists, doing an interview with him. Ask yourself this. Is this any way to be fair in an interview? You have never, ever heard me in all my tens of thousands of interviews start off an interview like this. Here's how this woman started it off.
Bridget is joining us next from here in Washington, D.C. Good morning. Thank you for waiting.
Hi there. Thanks for taking my call. I just had 3 points for Steve that I was hoping that he could address. The first one, do you know who Faust is? Because there is no correlation between the title of your book and the actual story of Faust. Secondly, what kind of medical authority do you have as a political analyst and a podcaster to really have any kind of informed opinion on the medical advice that anyone is giving at all, period, much less Dr. Fauci?
To the rest of her questions, what right do I have to question? I'm a damned American. That's what right. The Constitution says we the people, not them the experts, not them the public health professionals. You know, your government told you for 80 years UFOs weren't real. Now suddenly they want to tell you they are. Ask the Tuskegee Airmen what they think about public health officials. So, yeah, you vote. You have a constitution. This government begins with we the people in order to form a more perfect union, not this, the public health department. When you go to a doctor, man, and they tell you you have breast cancer and you need to get your breast removed over that lump in your chest, are you not given informed consent options? Are you not entitled to get a second opinion? We, by the way, ironically, my co-author, Todd Erzin, and I actually agree with you that we are not in position to question particular medical diagnoses. That's why we cite so many counter experts, Harvey Risch at Yale, Martin Kulldorff at Harvard. With these great epidemiologists, the Center for Responsible Medicine, for evidence-based medicine at Oxford University, all the various doctors, scientists, epidemiologists there, would they be expert enough for you? Dr. John Ioannidis, head of the of population health at Stanford University. That's a university maybe 1% of this audience, not including me, I couldn't get in, can get admitted to on an annual basis. Would that be expert enough for you? By your own logic and your own standard, who are you to question all these experts at Harvard, Yale, Stanford, Carnegie Mellon, Rockefeller University? Ma'am, who are you to question their skepticisms and scrutinies of Dr. Fauci by your own standard? What expertise do you have to tell Martin Kulldorff at Harvard he doesn't know what in the Sam Hill he's talking about? I will simply defer to your own standard, ma'am, and ask you, why are you questioning those who are questioning Dr. Fauci?
Well, that's a response. But again, he is not using a political or ideological basis. He's using only documents then in the scientific literature about Fauci and his background, and he's unqualified to be the most powerful scientist in the world, let alone leading this. And all you had to do is look at how Fauci mismanaged the war on AIDS. I'll give you one example, because I was against him in that. Just so you know, and here's the documentation. A group of journalists, really award-winning journalists, top journalists, they took a look at a question that had been raised but had never brought up in the media. Was there a successful treatment for AIDS at the beginning of the AIDS epidemic? And if it depends upon if you ask Anthony Fauci or Robert Gallo or anyone in a position of power, any of the gay or AIDS organizations, the answer was no, no. There was no cure. In fact, 60 Minutes did a piece with Mike Wallace, and he says, you know, it's always fatal, always fatal. And they found that there was not only proof, but abundant proof, that over 1,200 people at the Tri-City Healing Center, where I created all the protocols, were alive and well. Not one died in 15 years the center was open. In fact, there was a request, and 18 people went on an advanced protocol. Everyone seroconverted. They went from HIV positive, HIV negative. This was independently proven, their medical records, and they all agreed and volunteered to have their medical records open to the public. And Tony Brown, six times he had different people on his show, and Bill McCree, the multi-Emmy award-winning reporter, and Bill Tatum, the Amsterdam News, Doug Henderson, top journalist, lawyer, press conferences, one at the Walter Reed Theater in Lincoln Center, another one on 63rd and Broadway at General Media. Not a single member of the AIDS community, medical community, scientific community, or the media came to see the proof. So it was an intentional cover-up. At the same time that natural non-toxic treatments that would have saved millions of lives were denied, Anthony Fauci denied Bactrim, a drug, a regular drug that would knock out pneumocystis pneumonia, which was the number one killer of people diagnosed with AIDS. It is estimated that upwards of 300,000 people died because of the advice Anthony Fauci was giving. He mismanaged everything. Now look at him mismanaging this. So when someone wrote about this, they're only using sources, yet that's how politicized everything is today, where you cannot ask a legitimate question. Was there any misinformation what Sherry Tempany had to say? Was she very detailed? Did she know the biochemistry? And yet, how much detail in biochemistry and scholarship did Joe Scarsborough offer in calling people idiots and stupid? When the people who are choosing, most of them, to question the safety and efficacy of the vaccines, it's because they've done their homework. How much homework has the mainstream media done? But there's something else here also. There's brand new information in about the PCR tests and how they're being contaminated. The BBC actually did an undercover report and showed this. And also, there was a lot of information given out about the PCR giving false positive. It was showing that all these people testing positive weren't positive at all. Well, if all these PCR tests are wrong, that means there's no pandemic. If there's no pandemic, then there's no need for lockdown, masks, social distancing. None of this is needed, certainly not vaccines. Why isn't that being reported? And yet this is from multiple sources. Multiple. Yet not a word on it. Here is a letter that was written by a group of top world scientists. Quote, we acknowledge receipt of your March 23rd reply to our letter dated February 28th, seeking reassurance that foreseeable risks of gene-based COVID-19 vaccines have been ruled out in animal trials prior to human use. Our concerns arise from multiple lines of evidence, including that the SARS-2 COVID spike protein is not a passive docking protein, but is productive. Its production is likely to initiate blood coagulation via multiple mechanisms. Regrettably, your reply on March 23rd is unconvincing and unacceptable. We are dismayed that you chose to respond to our request for crucially important information in a dismissive and unscientific manner. Such a cavalier approach to your vaccine safety creates the unwelcome impression that the EMA is serving the interests of the very pharmaceutical companies whose products it is you are pledged to dutifully evaluate. The evidence is clear that there are some serious adverse reaction risks and that a number of people not at risk from SARS-2 have died following the vaccinations. Then he gives these 4 points. Listen carefully. These are some of the brightest, most qualified scientific minds in all of Europe. And they're challenging the European Union's take on COVID vaccine. One, you can see that the vaccines, which are more accurately described as investigational gene-based agents, enter the bloodstream, but you can obviously provide no quantitative data. In the absence of the latter, any scientific assessment you purport to have undertaken lacks foundation. Two, your statement that non-clinical studies do not indicate any detectable uptake in the vaccine into endothelial cells lacks credibility. We demand to see the scientific evidence, if not available. It must be assumed that endothelial cells are targeted. Three, auto attack could not have been excluded in animals unless they had been immunologically primed beforehand. We demand evidence that such experiments have been performed. Similarly, experiments have been undertaken before with previous unsuccessful candidate vaccines and fatal antibody-dependent enhancement of disease was observed. And fourth, finally, we request scientific evidence, not a vague description of what was purportedly seen in non-valid animal experiments. Your cursory mention of laboratory findings in humans is cynical in view of the plausible connection between production of spike protein and the emergence of thromboembolic serious adverse events. We demand to see the results of D-dimer determinations. As you are aware, D-dimer is a very good test as an aid to diagnosing thrombosis. And this was Doctors for COVID Ethics, There are dozens of groups of doctors now challenging the standard view on this. And also, what is not taken into consideration, this person who was asking the question wants us to believe that all things given by science, all things given by experts, is accurate, not to be challenged. Richard Gale is here to give us some facts on this, and I'll just start with this, Richard. Quote, the FDA receives 45% of its annual budget from the pharmaceutical industry. Quote, and the CDC, frankly, is a vaccine company. It owns 56 vaccine patents and buys and distributes $4.6 billion in vaccines annually through the Vaccines for Children's Program, which is over 40% of its total budget. Take it from there.
Well, I think that the fact that the CDC operates and functions more is almost like a private corporation. And there is something called, you know, the CDC Foundation, which is actually, if I'm not mistaken, is registered as a private entity. It's not public. I think that should pretty much answer a lot of our questions right there, that there is has always been a large conflict of interest between the CDC and with the private pharmaceutical industry. That's a board of advisors on the Vaccine Advisory Committee are all people that have been on the receiving funding from pharmaceutical companies for their research. And as we've reported in the past, when this research is conducted and using pharmaceutical funding and donations, these companies, they're expecting something in return from it. And they're not going to give these, millions and millions of dollars out for research to go without getting something in return that's going to benefit and support and promote their products. So I think that's the lay of the land that we've been in, and it's equally true with the COVID vaccines that we're seeing now. We've seen just how much money of our taxpayer dollars have been spent to go to the development of Moderna's and Pfizer's and J&J's vaccines already. And money to many other companies as well. I forgot how much they actually gave to some of the European countries, our taxpayer dollars, just to go for. So I think what's happening is this is much less a national issue as it is a global issue right now. And as we've stated so many times, how these companies are multinational corporations. They don't have any allegiance to the national policies of individual nation states. Their interests are much more global, especially with all these companies now that are trying to work on the COVID vaccine and now distributing the COVID vaccine. That's where their allegiance is. And so, and the U.S. has just been one of the sheeps playing into this game that the big pharma has been playing on us.
Okay, and also, let us realize that children, young people, healthy people are not at risk at all. The vast majority of the public has already been exposed and has some form of immunity to COVID viruses, especially since the SARS-2 is so similar to the SARS-1. And so we're not taking into account the people who will be excluded from being vaccinated because they have medical conditions that would throw them out of the line of being vaccinated. Any responsible physician would say you have these conditions that could spike or cause an autoimmune reaction. And what about all the millions, tens of millions of Americans who already have an autoimmune condition? Think of all the people that are on chemotherapy. Think of all the people with liver transplants and others that are on drugs that prevent an immune reaction. Therefore, the immune reaction would cause the body to reject the new tissue. Every single person would be vaccinated on the planet if Bill Gates, Anthony Fauci, and the other people had their way. There is no ethic. There is no morality. There is no even good science. There's no good medicine in any of this at this point. It's just a mad rush to profit as much as humanly possible. And all the defenders in the media are there to support that. And so take out the children. They don't need vaccination. look at the mortality rate in children. They survive 99.997%. I mean, that's, and yet they want to vaccinate all of them. They want to vaccinate babies. To me, this is as tantamount as psychiatrists giving antipsychotic medication to a six-month-old child and justifying they gave over 500,000 young babies antipsychotic and antidepressant medications. That's how fraudulent psychiatry has become as a pseudoscience. And yet it is not questioned by the media, by the government, by the funding agencies, by the courts. You know, talk about stupid. Even over the weekend, Spain passed a new law that makes it illegal to be out without a mask, including swimming in the ocean. Think of that. You're in the ocean swimming, and you must wear a mask. Wow. That is just amazing to what degree, once you start convincing people of the rightness of your ways, how far it can go. Thank you very much, Richard Gale.
Okay.
Thank you all for listening, and go to GaryNall.com and read the articles, scholarly written, objective, non-political, no ideologies, just the truth, and you'll see how you've been gamed and lied to up to this point. Have a nice day.